On the 24th of October 1924, this fine hall was packed with the good citizens of Belfast and beyond to mark the official start of BBC Radio in Northern Ireland, or 2BE, as it was known then. We're back in the Ulster Hall in 2014 to celebrate, and through an evening made up of music, readings, and beautiful little gems from the radio archives to reflect on the different aspects of the BBC's work across those 90 years. The Ulster Orchestra is on stage, and we've got a stellar cast of local and international talent waiting in the wings. Dulcis Christus by Grancini, performed for us live on Sounds Classical. Come all down, whoever the volunteers are, and make yourselves comfortable there at the red mic, live for us on Sounds Classical. Do you know what happened actually during that performance? None of you will have noticed this. There's a tiny spider on my script, just here on the running order. And he walked along the page, and as soon as you started singing, I kid you not, he stopped and he stood there, and I didn't want to move him, and he didn't move until you finished singing. Honestly, that's the effect you have on the insect kingdom, never mind what effect you're having to listeners on BBC Radio Ulster tonight. Who have we got? Introduce yourselves there, these two young singers.
Molly.
And Jenny.
And Nora.
It's music. You're supposed to play concert, right? Or am I wrong?
No.
Sorry, government.
Right. I'd love to, you know, I'm trying to think today. I never played as a soloist. Never played a soloist, but yet I studied music. I studied clarinet till I was 19, but I never played.
When did you start?
Started when I was about 7, 8.
So you've played for like 11, 12 years?
Yeah.
And apart from that Christmas party where you put
that was pick up the clarinet.
Yeah, but still, then you performed as a soloist because you felt it was fun, right?
Exactly, so. And that's what I find, because I haven't played in years.
Yeah.
And the reason being, I find the clarinet is not necessarily a sociable instrument. If a crowd of people come around your house, I wouldn't take the clarinet out and play something, because everybody has to sit back and listen, rather than if you take out a tin whistle or a flute, people can join in and play along.
Yeah, well, I think you couldn't be more wrong, actually, because it all comes down to what kind of music you play. I mean, people can take out a tuba at a party and play something. My agent has this house party every year, and he's a professional tuba player as well. And he always gathers around 5 or 6, 7 people. He has to play arrangements at the party, so it gets a party music. It's kind of cheesy music, but still you're happy and you enjoy it then.
So you have very kindly offered to give me a quick masterclass,
yes,
or a fresher course. I should explain. I dug this clarinet out from under the stairs. Apart from playing it very late one night over Christmas and playing, I think it ain't necessarily so, I haven't actually played this in anger in probably 25 years.
And what I just heard from you before we started doing this, that doesn't sound like it.
You're very kind.
I am kind, but I'm not saying it because I'm kind.
Yeah. What would you do then to kind of make me fall back in love with this instrument again?
Yeah, well, I would focus exactly on the reason why you picked up the clarinet at that Christmas party, regardless of what kind of liquid intake before. That's the key to it all, and then you need to do this practice, but you will get into it really, really fast. It's like working out. At first it perhaps feels, if you haven't done it in a while, it feels really, really, you get really exhausted and it feels boring. But after a week, you get addicted to it. Take 10 minutes each day. I mean, lock yourself in a room, put on a favorite record, just you, the clarinet, and some music that you like, and just play along. Set a timer so you don't do it too long.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have, or like you see, okay, I have 2 minutes left. Well, then I just listen to it. That's the most important thing. And then we can go into, you know, technical stuff, like how do I make my embouchure? That's the way the mouth, where the muscles, how to get that in shape as well. But that's fairly easy. How high can you play?
Up to some C, D, E.
Right. Yeah, great.
What's that?
That's an F. Well,
hey!
Not an F, sounding E flat. So just for the listeners to know.
Still have it.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, well, you do, and you're laughing, and so am I. But it's actually true. You sound good. push out the air with your cheek muscles. Okay, good. So you have your mouth filled of air. You can't see this, dear radio listeners. But John is breathing heavily through his nose.
A puff.
Exactly.
Like a balloon.
Good. And you can apply for the Royal College of Stockholm.
Emil, it's been, honestly, I've really, really enjoyed that. And
thank
I have
you,
to say, re-enthused me for the clarinet.
Good.
It won't be 25 years till I take it out again.
Great. This Christmas.
Great to see you in Belfast and come back again and visit us.
Thank
come
you.
Back in a year's time and I'll
yes.
play something better for you.
Yes, we can play
some
duets.
Dance Prelude by Lutoslavsky.
Okay, it's a deal.
There we go.
You heard it here. You heard it here first. He will play the Lutoslavsky Dance Prelude in a year from now. Good.
Let's finish with It Ain't Necessarily So.
Good. Go on.
And my show is all about what's going on in Wales, and so people ring up and try and plug their events, and it's great because, you know, it's that battle with the BBC of like not saying too much but saying enough to make it interesting.
Is that the secret? I haven't learned that one.
No, not me. I just go, I say, oh, go on, plug it, give the phone line, give the email, do the lot. L'aurora di bianco vestita.
And at the back of all this, you're still singing then. As you say, you're going to be singing Strauss later on in the year.
Yeah, I'm still singing. I'm still doing a lot of concerts. I just did my first acting part, right, which was great fun. Have you ever heard of a programme called Stella? Ruth Jones writes it, who was Gavin and Stacey.
Oh,
people
yes.
will remember for that.
Of course,
she was
I know
Nessa.
What you're talking about now, yes.
Anyway, she's written this programme, set in the valleys. And so she rang me up and she said, listen, I know you're not really an actor. Thanks, Ruth. Oh, it's ever so flattering.
Good start.
Yeah, great. But she said, I've got this part that I think would be brilliant for you. And I said, oh, what is it? And basically, right, I had to play the part of, right, John, imagine this, okay? David Sanchez, a Mexican wrestler, right, whose parents came from Patagonia, and there was a big Welsh kind of community in Patagonia. So I've come back and I'm like this Mexican wrestler who wants to sing all these Welsh songs, but in this Mexican accent. So I have to sing Delilah at the end of one of the shows, and it's all like, I saw the lighting on the nighting as she passed by my window. So the whole thing is absolutely hilarious, and I've loved doing it. It's been great fun.
Can you do the green, green grass of home?
Green, green grass. And I had to do...
We're live in the marquee at the back of Proms in the Park, down at Titanic Slipways in Belfast, at BBC Radio Ulster. If you want to tweet us, use the hashtag LNOP and the wee promslive.bbc.co.uk to get the wee Proms in the Park app that'll tell you all the stories behind the people who are performing for you and the music that you hear. Dana Masters.
Hello, how are you?
You're so welcome. That was beautiful in the first time.
Oh, wow, thank you so much.
We were entranced. I know when you're singing out there, you're singing to the crowd that are in front of you.
Yeah.
But believe me, there was a wee crowd gathered here in the marquee and we were all huddled around going,
that is just beautiful.
Oh, it was magical for us. I mean, just the buzz of the crowd. It was, couldn't ask for more here. So.
And I was talking to Scott and Lindley earlier on and they were saying, you know, it's different when you're used to working in a smaller combo and you've more flexibility, and this is, you know, this is different. There's a big bus.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
on a big
this
bus
was,
together.
This was it. There was no changing what the orchestra was playing.
Yeah.
So we all had to be on our best behavior, which is weird for people who normally play jazz music. But we loved it. We absolutely loved it. It was great.
So you've come from Carolina to Lisburn, made your home here, based here, and working so hard.
Yeah, I am. I'm
you
so fortunate to be working so hard. I mean, it's the good people of Northern Ireland that keep inviting me places.
Wow, wherever you're listening to us tonight, it's in the car, in the kitchen, lying in your bed, I'm sure that conjured up some beautiful images. That's a piece called Ballade d'Irina. By the French composer Sébastien Vachez, born in 1972, 73. beautiful piece performed for us by the Agnew McAllister duo, Aisling Agnew, flautist, and Matthew McAllister on guitar. That was really gorgeous. Thank you so much for coming, because I know you came over from Glasgow, not just to see us, you got a Sunday roast at home as
we
well.
We did, yeah, it was well worth it.
You called in to see us while you were over here, so we appreciate that. Thank you very much indeed. And if you want to go and see them, it's the 19th of October in the Great Hall at Queen's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Claire Jones, you said to me that you were the official harpist for the Prince of Wales. I mean, you just came out of college, actually. Graduated from the Royal College of Music and straight into the job as official harpist to the Prince of Wales. That's quite a gig.
Oh, thank you. Yes, and I was studying for my master's then at the same time at the Royal Academy of Music as well. So
did he actually audition you?
He did, yes. So I had to do a first round audition at Clarence House for a panel of experts and the Prince's private secretary as well, who happens to be a harpist. And also I had to do then a private audition for His Royal Highness, and he stood literally about a foot away from the pillar of my harp. So it's quite an intimate experience. But he was amazing, and he's been such a huge support for my career, you know, throughout those 4 years. I mean, it really helped raise my profile as a harpist and gave me a chance really to make my mark and to springboard my career.
Tell me about the experience of playing a one-on-one concert for the Queen.
That was probably the icing on top of the cake, really. I played one-to-one for her.
This must have been great fun, yourself and Alice, you know, tramping around Iceland looking for dodgy pianos.
Yeah, we found some really interesting ones as well, you know. Things that I would never have imagined existed in Iceland, like old Soviet pianos that somehow ended up here after the World War. And yeah, actually a lot of, and we spoke to very interesting people on the way who knew a lot about the history of these pianos. And it was really great fun for us.
And as well as the recording, it wasn't just the type of piano that you chose and where you played, but you also added some effects, if you like, or added some production sparkle to it as well, to the Chopin project.
The project is kind of twofold. So there is the original Chopin compositions that we didn't really change anything, but we recorded them in a new way. And yeah, I added some production. There's echoes, there's delays, there's ambience in the background, and all this kind of studio technologies that we used to enhance the mood of the songs.
You have Roxanne, you have every little thing she does is magic, every breath you take. And it shows the kind of variety of stuff that Sting sings.
There is a great variety to his music. I think that's one of the best, really, the most appealing things about it, you know.
And you got in touch with himself?
Yeah, well, his management have been fantastic from the start. I had to submit scores. Obviously, we were making a lot of changes, taking the vocal line out, and they gave it the approval. We were really delighted they were approved.
And do you have to do that? Is that part of the process?
I think for anyone covering, if they're using vocals and keeping things very much close to the original arrangement, then you can just go and buy a license and organise it. But if you're going to change things like we have done, you have to apply for approval, yes.
So how does that work when you ring up and say, hello? We're the Lasserre String Quartet, we're from Northern Ireland, and we're thinking of doing this, and you know that wee line in such a song? Well, I kind of thought F sharp would be nice. Be nice to change the chord.
It is a bit nerve-wracking, the thought of submitting. So the scores were put together, and then I submitted to the management through his publisher, EMI. So they obviously had a good look over. I'm hoping at some stage he had a listen himself. So we did send a CD his way, but he's pretty busy on Broadway at the minute with his new musical. So I'm sure maybe between that he might have
had
a listen.
Who knows? In a kind of, as Scott talks about things happening and being in the mix, somewhere as we speak, Sting could be on a long car journey somewhere down through, you know, upstate New York,
yeah,
and listening to this.
That would
listening
be nice.
To this album in the car as he goes.
I don't know.
Would that be a kind of completion of the circle?
That would be fun.
We've actually tweeted him just to let him know that in case he happens to be listening. And if it hadn't been music, because you talked about basketball, you talked about football, you talked about chess, and you talked about maths and science. If it hadn't been music, if you hadn't had this life on stage, what would Noah Stewart be doing?
I wanted to become a scientist.
when I was younger. I was great at math and science, and I loved solving problems. And I liked very much working alone. Not saying I wasn't a people person or didn't enjoy working with groups, but I liked the concentration, the level of concentration, which is very much similar to being an opera singer, because I'm always by myself studying music. Although there is collaboration, like today with Ruth.
And you've been learning some Derry. She's been teaching you some Derry words as well.
She has. Wait. Coward. What is it? Coward.
Coward.
Coward. And I've learned to say, and when you see someone on the street, you say yes.
That's right. Yes. That's so good. Yeah.
And
yes.
And also hi.
So we would make you say yes, Noah.
Yes, Tom. Yes. How are you? Right. How were you today? Hi.
Hi. That's right. At the end of sentence. That's good. He's a natural. He's in such a short space of time. It's a musical ear, you see. He can pick it up so quickly.
I'm a good listener.
Is piping, and I'll ask this to both of you, as an older piper and a younger piper, is piping a vocation? Are pipers kind of born, not made?
It's more a disease than a vocation, to tell you the truth now, do you know? No, it's something, once you get into it, you really do get gripped by it, because it's a very compulsive, compelling, beguiling kind of instrument, irksome and glorious in equal measure.
Because as you say, with tuning and with all the problems with playing the pipes, if you actually thought about it, it'd be far easier to play a fiddle or play the whistle.
Oh, you wouldn't be at it.
So when did you decide, Connor, you wanted to be a piper?
Ahead, it ain't over yet, I hope.
Well, you're halfway there. You're halfway to getting the telegram.
Yes, thank you.
Whenever you look back then, is it a recording? Is it a particular performance? Or what is it that stands out as the highlights of your career so far?
It's very, very hard to single one particular thing out. I think...
Well, is it Wallace and Gromit? It must be playing with Wallace and Gromit
What was it called? Yes, it was... Musical Concerto. Marvels. It was called... Oh, yes, Concerto in E, lad.
That's right.
But at this stage, you're taking tiny wee curls of maple out of it, and it doesn't look to the untrained eye like a violin yet.
I suppose to my eye, what I am seeing is, the most important part of the violin, which is the inside. I'm trying to see that interior arch, which will offer a support, to the strings, and it'll offer. Whenever the player puts the bow down on the strings and puts pressure on the bridge, this interior arch will provide the strength, and it'll also transmit vibrations across the whole instrument. So, although it doesn't look like a violin, it's the part that you really have to. Well, you have to get all the parts right, but it's very important that this part is correct.
So how much of that is art and how much of it is science?
Well, this part is science. It will look good. It just so happens that it looks good, but it's like a lot of things that function very well, they just happen to look good as well.
What you're doing is, it's kind of magical, Martin, because you're breathing life into a piece of wood.
Well, I suppose,
what would happen to that piece of wood if it wasn't here?
That piece of wood would have grown in a forest, and it's a remarkable piece of wood. It's a freak of nature that makes it grow with this lovely pattern running across it. And someone has gone to the trouble to take a look around all the maple trees that were cut and find one in a thousand trees that has this beautiful marking, and has it in such abundance. You can see the... There's a sheen off it.
So it's called a clunk.
It's the gentlest kind of... I mean, of all the things you could be doing, this
very
is...
Very soothing.
But you must feel so much better at the end of rehearsal.
Full time would be lovely.
And what kind of music, what kind of arrangements do you get for bells?
Well, bells very much originated in America, and to this day... are played very much church music. There are not a lot of churches in America that their organ is basically the bells. So most of the arrangements of music come from the States, and you can find lots and lots of arrangements, Christmas arrangements, sacred, secular, everything is out there. Obviously, from a primary school point of view, we're looking at simple pieces, but anything and everything is out there.
Has Bruno Mars ever arranged anything for handbells?
Not yet, maybe that's my niche. Maybe that's where I could make my money.
That's your calling.
It's just the most beautiful sound, the most cheerful sound. And our thanks to Mrs. Glover and the boys and girls from P5, 6 and 7 from Cedar Integrated Primary School in Crossgar for taking part in Classical Connections this week.